This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
I'm Andrew Johnstone, and you're listening to The Last Breath, a podcast about death and dying, brought to you by Hospice Waikato and Free FM, the Waikato's community access media organisation. Hospice Waikato's Rainbow Place provides free specialist palliative care to children and young people up to the age of 21 with advanced, incurable or life-limiting conditions. 18-year-old Cameron Williams is one of those children, and in this insightful and often profound interview, Louise Williams talks about her life caring for a child with complex medical needs.
My name is Louise Williams and my son Cameron has cerebral palsy.
What is cerebral palsy, Louise? So
it's a physical, it manifests as a physical disability. It's brain damage, and there's like a lot of things, there's a spectrum. So it's damage to the brain essentially that controls things like muscle movement, mainly from what I understand it. There's a full spectrum of children that have got cerebral palsy, but they can walk, talk, eat. They may just have slight balance problems, right up to children like Cameron, who he can talk, but you have to know him to understand him, so he's hard to understand. He is fully reliant on support. He's not independent at all. He requires wheelchair, supported seating, so he doesn't walk. He can't sit up, he can't roll over, and he eats, but his muscles get tired very, very quickly, so he doesn't eat enough to sustain himself, so he is tube-fed as well. They scale it. It's called a system, GMFCS, which is Gross Motor Function Classification System, from 1 to 5. 1 being they might just have a slight, you know, they might need a little built-up shoe, or, you know, they often one side of their body is affected. To 5, where it's totally involved, they need help in all areas. So Cameron is a 5. It mostly happens before birth or at birth, where there is damage done to the brain.
And how does that brain damage occur?
So for Cameron, he was deprived of oxygen before he was born. Yeah, there's this question of, he was quite premature, he was 8 weeks prem. And there's a little bit of a question over whether he came early because there was something wrong, or there's something wrong now because he came early. And it's hard to tell.
And Cameron's just turned 18.
Yes, yeah.
And you've got one older son.
Yes.
And what's his name?
His name is Damien.
And he's fully functioning?
Yes. Oh, fully functioning. He plays sports in the summer, he plays sports in the winter, he drives, he has a job full time. Very, very fully functioning.
And what was it like for him to grow up with a disabled sibling?
Yeah, so he was 3.5. At that time, he didn't have many cousins at all, I think, and in fact, even two of them were overseas at the time, so he didn't have a lot of prior experience with children. He went to daycare, but he had no experience of children in his own home. So we've got this photo of Damien meeting Cameron in an incubator, and he's looking, you know, all very interested. He has just grown up with that being the norm. He's never, he's just growing up with his brother as his brother, and he has things that really tick him off about his brother, and they have a typical sibling relationship, and where they, you know, Cameron has learnt how to push Damien's buttons in his own way. Damien fights back, you know, and they just get along. There's never been anything else. So, yeah, it's just what it is for Damien. You know, he's never had the little brother or sister that's gone into his room and stolen his things or followed him round. It is what it is. And all the friends that he brings home, they all say hello to Cameron and include him like he's anyone else. I mean, he is anyone else, basically, but there's a you can tell, you know, children that have never been exposed to or mixed with children with additional needs, they look at them like they're a foreign object, whereas Damo, you know, he's growing up with him. All his friends, they come in and they include him and they say hello, and he just is another one of the boys.
Is Cameron able to attend school?
Yes, he is. Yes, so he goes to Hillcrest High School, which is a mainstream high school for children from 13 to 17. Cameron being special needs, and with the funding that he gets, he is allowed to stay till he's 21 within that school environment. So he is part of a unit called the Physical Assistance Centre, the PAC. So there's maybe 10 to 15 children in that unit. I'm very vague about it because they are very much, they teach the students that they are teenagers and they're independent. So I don't go in there. I don't see a lot of the class. And they, again, it's a full range of kids who are only ever in there to maybe take their meds. The rest of the time they're out in mainstream doing NCEA, right down to a little group of them like Cameron who are unable to do NCEA. They spend the whole time in there getting their needs met, doing a learning program tailored to the individual. And it's incredibly important to Cameron because it's one of the only times that he spends away from mum and dad and doing his own thing, learning to rely on other people for help, learning to communicate. So he loves it. He doesn't like school holidays.
And he's there 5 days a week?
Yes.
And what's his favourite subject?
Cooking, because he likes to eat what they have to offer. He'll occasionally, they say, oh, he did a really good job. He dried the dishes, and I see the photos and he's there and he's just, well, I'm going to let you hold my hand over that tea towel and the plate, but I'm going to look out the window. And yeah, he loves anything where he can use his voice, actually. Because everything can be dropped or put out of reach, whereas his voice is his tool. So he loves nothing more than chatting to the staff, and that can be done anywhere. But he doesn't really like, they did have trouble with him with PE and music, mainly because there was a lot of kids making a lot of noise around him and he couldn't follow them, he couldn't see them properly. So that scared him a little bit, but he, like any teenager, he goes where he has to go and he puts up with some things and enjoys other things, and it can vary from day to day. He just likes a conversation.
Is he able to use a computer?
He uses an iPad. His fine muscle skills, fine motor skills, so that's the fingers and, you know, pinching and getting little details like that, he's not really good at, but if he's doing something he knows he shouldn't, he can actually use those hands quite precisely. He will use an iPad, and he can change videos on YouTube and get what he wants. He can't enter something into the search bar. You know, he can't search for something, but if you've bought up a list of videos and he can see the preview, he'll choose from that. He did go through a phase where he wanted the iPad all the time, whereas now he only maybe uses the iPad once a month.
And what's his hobbies? So does he like to watch movies or play games?
No. He likes to talk, and he likes to watch what other people are doing. So we call him Constable Henwood because he sits in one spot in our house where we live semi-rurally, and there's a few people up our driveway, and he likes to sit in the dining room, and he's got the perfect view of the driveway, and he knows what the neighbours each drive, and he'll look out the window and he'll know, oh, so-and-so's just come in, so-and-so's gone out, who's that? And he likes to be involved, but in a slow way. You know, too much going on, he overwhelms him. He's also got autism, intellectual disability as well. So those are two different things. The intellectual disability is damage to the brain as well. So he learns he's got a lot of difficulties with intellectual things as well. So he likes the same thing every day, and deviating from that, he's saying, you know, why are you doing that? Don't want to do that.
So routine is very important.
Yeah, very, very important.
And what's his favourite food?
He doesn't have one. Like, he will either eat something or he won't. He won't eat sausages. He will never eat a sausage because he choked on one once and never again. But even things like, he loves ice cream, but even if he doesn't want to eat, if he's not feeling 100% that day or he just doesn't want it, he won't eat it. He likes the same things in his lunchbox every day, but again, if he's not feeling quite right, if the wind is blowing the wrong way, he won't eat it. You know, whereas adults tend to eat it because it's there and, you know, finish something, whereas if he doesn't want it, he won't.
And how is this for you, Louise? He obviously needs a lot of care and attention. He's at school 5 days a week.
Yeah.
So you have time outside of that, but when he's at home, he needs your constant attention?
He does, yes, because he has an unsafe swallow, so he can choke on his own secretions. He has reflux, so he can, you know, burp and something will come up and then he can choke on that. So he really can't be left. You know, I can leave him inside the house if I go and hang the washing out, but I have to have a line of sight to him. He requires help for everything. You know, and if he drops something, that's it, it's gone. He needs someone to pick it up.
And that must be exhausting.
Yeah, it is exhausting because we've got the complete medical needs, which are quite a lot, and he had quite a big, quite a serious medical issue or emergency just in December, which is has made things a little more important to keep on top of his medical needs and his physical needs. But then on the other side, we have got his intellectual needs as well. So, yeah, it's an all-round package where we can't... He requires complete round-the-clock care for all of his needs.
This must be in the normal dynamics of family, and you know, for you and your partner, it must take its toll at times.
It does, yep, because I often am living, especially now with the recent health problems he's had, am living in a constant state of, and it's not for lack of trying, it's not because I'm an unhappy person, it's just the things can switch really fast with him. So it's almost like living in a constant state of fight or flight. If he comes home from school, for example, and he coughs or something, instead of, you know, it's straight away, it's why has he coughed? Has he aspirated? What does that cough mean? Is it going to escalate? Is it just a cough? So it is quite, you have to be on all the time.
Can you get a good night's sleep?
If he does, yep. He doesn't require a lot overnight, but if he coughs overnight again, I wear this health ring that monitors my quality of sleep, and it, what it tells me is, it's not front page news, it tells me that I sleep in light sleep all the time. And it's because I have had 18 years of, if he coughs or makes a noise overnight, because he's lying on his back, the head's elevated, but because he's lying on his back, if he coughs, is he going to choke? So I usually will wake up at every little sound. And my partner Benji, so he works, he does shift work, and he can sleep through a train bowling through the house. I don't get a lot of good sleep, because I'm always awake wondering, you know, hoping that Cameron is having a good sleep, a safe sleep.
And how does hospice help?
Hospice help.
And we're talking Rainbow Place, the children's facility.
Yeah, so Rainbow Place help. I say I couldn't do it without them. I did for 10 years, but it's just, even the spiritual, the social support is just, you know, you're not alone, you're not going through things. And I will often ring up Cameron's nurse and say, hey, like, it's not an actual nursing problem, but, and you know, they'll hear me out, they'll listen to me, they listen and they hear me. But what I have found most beneficial is the respite care. So in the inpatient unit, when Cameron comes for 2 nights, I can just walk away and I know that the staff are trained in his medicine, they're trained in all of his medical needs, they can see things that, hey, that doesn't look right, whereas to anyone else might be just he'll tell me if he's sore, he'll tell me if he's not feeling well. He can't, or he doesn't. So I can leave here, I can drive out that driveway and have complete peace of mind that the nurses, the doctors, the healthcare assistants have seen it all before, they've done it all before, they can cope and they will cope, they do cope, you know, whereas if there are a number of respite solutions in Hamilton for special needs people, but they often will have no experience with tube feeding or medication, because Cameron takes a lot of medication. It's all taken through the tube, but they will have no training with tube feeding. They'll have no training with medications and just how important it is to do them correctly to the, you know, right to the wire. They And it's just, if I had to teach someone how to use Cameron's tube and then walk away expecting, oh yeah, they've got this, it took me long enough to learn it. So teaching someone else and then walking away and going, oh, they'll be all right, it's not conducive to having a good, relaxing break.
So 3 times a year?
Yeah.
You have this two-day break 3 times a year.
Yeah.
You drive out back onto the main road and you have a weight lifted?
Yeah. It's driving out of here, it's like, oh, gosh, now I've got, you know, I've got free time. What can I do? How can I fill my free time?
And what do you do?
Sometimes I go and stay at the beach with family. Sometimes I just go home and just, I do my regular jobs at home. I do the chores. I do everything I normally do, but I don't have to draw up and clean 19 syringes every day. I don't have to medicate him. I don't have to draw up feeds. I don't have to listen for the cough. I don't have to listen for an alarm with his pump. I can just go home and live my life. I can read a book if I want to. I can put my shoes on and walk out the door if I want to.
You spoke about hospice, your spiritual needs. Can you explain that a bit more, please, Louise?
It's spiritual maybe was the wrong word. It's more...
Emotional needs?
Emotional, yeah. It was more emotional
needs. So you talk to counsellors sometimes?
Sometimes, yeah. Yep, it's just, you know, I've been learning a lot recently about grieving living losses.
And you've been grieving?
Yeah. I was always of, you know... Like, if you talk about grief to the general public, like if you go down to New World and you interview everyone about grief, they will say it's what happens when someone dies. But there is a whole part of grief that can come from living losses. So, you know, for example, I grieve the fact that this year Cameron should be, if he is so inclined, starting university, moving out of home, getting his first car or girlfriend or, you know, so I grieve the fact that Cameron is not doing those things and he never will do those things. He is still a nappies full time. He still, in many regards, requires the needs and the care of that of a six-month-old baby, you know, and so... that comes with grief, you know, like last year, the end of last year, all of his age group, so all the kids that he's grown up, you know, through life with, they all graduated high school. He's not going to do that. And I'm very realistic, like I try to be as positive as I can be, but, you know, and some people will say, oh, you know, but there's plenty that he can do and he's got a wonderful life. Well, he does. He enjoys his life most of the time, but, you know, no, he's not going to ever grow up in the sense that he's going to become a fully functioning adult with a job and a degree. So it does all come with grieving. Even we had a family trip recently and our van broke down. We couldn't just borrow someone's car. We couldn't just go jump in a car and go, you know. He required all this extra help to do something that most other people just wake up and do. So there is a lot of grief around his journey.
Do you grieve for yourself sometimes?
Yeah, look, I don't have a degree myself. I don't have a career path. I often struggle to answer the question, who am I? Because my whole life, you know, since he was born, has been dedicated to his care, his needs, what he needs. And look, I'm not someone that's, you know, holding it against him in any way. Look, he, as much as I struggle with it, he didn't choose this either. So there's, it's not about that. It's just about, you know, in 50 years' time, if someone says, who were you when, you know, what did you contribute? You know, I wasn't a nurse that made things better for hundreds of people. I didn't teach hundreds and thousands of children to do amazing things. I care for Cameron. And that's not a small thing, but it's him first and then me. So, yeah, there is... I've had to give up a lot of things, but I don't like thinking about it like that, because he didn't ask to be like this, and I'm just giving him a good life.
But it would only be human and natural and normal for sometimes for you to go, why me? And this is too much, this is a burden.
Yep, and burden, people think that when you say burden, that you don't want them, that you wish they weren't here, or that's not what a burden is. A burden, by definition, is someone that requires, you know, so much extra care, and that's what he is. And I mean, I would never outwardly call him a burden, because I think societally that's just not, it's a negative thing. So I wouldn't ever do that. But yeah, I mean,
but the fact that you can actually say it safely on this podcast,
yeah,
is a way of educating people, explaining, yeah, to people. And I think I've never had a burden like yours. I've never had the difficulties that you have. But I intuitively understand that's the complexities of it, emotional complexities.
Yeah, you know, I don't use the word burden. I mean, if you want to go by dictionary definition, yes, I would, you know, he's a very complex responsibility, and he will be till the day one of us dies. And that's probably the biggest thing. It's probably the biggest thing that trips me up is, I mean, no one wants to bury a child.
Does he have an outlook for a long life?
He has an outlook for, they don't expect that he will pass away, die. People are scared of that word too. They don't expect that he will die imminently, but something very simple like a cold could be the thing that does it. He comes under Rainbow Place because he has a life-limiting condition. This is quite fresh for me, because he's medically complex, but he's not medically fragile. You know, his organs work normally. He has quite a good set of lungs. He has only been hospitalised a handful of times for illnesses, but just recently, last December, he was hospitalised for an infection in his leg, and it quickly turned into sepsis, which overnight had him in a coma. And he was fighting for his life. We nearly lost him right around Christmas, just gone. And it happened so incredibly quickly. There was no warning. There was no, you know, he wasn't saying to me 5 days before, my toes sore, Mum, please take a look at it. My legs sore, Mum. You know, he can't do that. So it really, the first presentation was he started vomiting, which they, in hindsight, now looking back, said that is probably, it was the infection starting to really make him sick. But for us, that was the first sign. So, yeah, and it wasn't until we were through that, like he was in a grade 3 coma, which is no response for pain, no response to any stimuli. And it wasn't until after that the doctors all got together and they said, yeah, you nearly lost him. So up until then, I would have said, he's pretty sturdy. He's a sturdy young man. But it was a real eye-opener that he is not, because I have been coasting through his life going, yep, he's awake, he's up, he's gone to school, he's fine. But actually, it's those hidden things that mean that he is not. So, yeah, I mean, that was a huge wake-up call to think that we did nearly lose him only 6 weeks ago.
Your focus is on Cameron.
Yeah.
How has that affected your other child? Because often when you have a child with very high needs, other children miss out on certain things.
Yeah, Cameron has spent many an hour sitting in the van, doing not much at all, but watching while his brother is training or playing sport. Or I know what you mean, and it's a balancing act, because if Cameron falls in his health, you know, straight away his health comes first, everything else has got to go on the back burner. So I guess Damien, again, it was one of those things that he just grew up with.
He's well adjusted?
I like to think that he is really well adjusted. He walked into the ICU, intensive care unit, recently, and he was just, you know, you could tell that he was uncomfortable, but it wasn't discomfort, it was he doesn't like seeing his brother sick, which is, you know, that's the same for anyone. You don't want to see your family there sick like that. But he turns up, he does, we've tried to, Damien was never, he didn't like, you know, toys or anything. He was always about the rugby ball. If he had he went to sleep with rugby balls in his bed. And as long as he got to training twice a week and the game on Saturday, he was a happy lad. Feed him a pie or some McDonald's afterwards, I'm not missing out on anything, you know. So Cameron, on the other hand, was dragged to a lot of rugby that he couldn't have cared less about. You know, many a year we went to the stadium to watch the Chiefs and All Blacks. Cameron went for the hot chips. There are probably things that Damien's missed out on, and now at the age of 21, he's incredibly good at pointing those out and saying, "Oh, you love Cameron more than me," and you know. But it's just he doesn't mean it, because he knows he's growing up with the understanding that some people require more than others.
But I think that will also change as he gets older as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you remember being 20, I'm sure. And I remember being 20,
yeah.
And I can remember how thoughtless I was at times. I think as he becomes 40 and 50, he will have a very different perspective.
Oh, definitely, and he even does now. I remember one time he brought home a friend from high school, and the friend sort of came in and inched his way past Cameron and didn't, you know, clearly had never had any exposure, introduction with children like Cameron. Didn't talk to Cameron, didn't answer, because Cameron will say, "What's your name? Who are you?" But he'll say it 100 times and you've just got to say it back. And this, I remember this young man didn't know how to talk to Cameron, so just didn't. And we never saw him in the house again. Damien, he remained friends with him, but he said, "Oh, it's just, you know, not someone that he ever wanted to bring home." And
so he is protective of his brother?
Very, 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 very. Like, if there's ever a case in the news media of abuse of vulnerable people, Damien is he's right up there with what he'd like to do to them and, you know, how wrong it is. He's incredibly protective, and he's incredibly good with Cameron's friends that may come over from time to time.
So Cameron has friends?
Yeah. Yeah, he has friends. He has peers, and I'll invite them over every now and then, you know, if I know their mums. And Cameron will talk to them, but he has always related better to adults than peers of his own age. But he will, you know, who's on your bus today, Cameron? And he'll name them all. And if one of them's not on the bus, where is she? Where's she gone? What's happened? So he's very concerned with who's in what area and what is everyone doing. But so he's definitely got the peers that he likes to spend time with, but he relates better to adults because he likes the one-on-one interaction, like talking back and forth, whereas a lot of children that are like him sort of are like him and they can't talk to each other as well as he would expect. So, you know, and he's always needed an adult there for his needs to keep him safe. So, yeah, he just relates better to adults.
Now, I think it's three times in the course of this interview, Louise, you've brought up the word death and you've said, and quite rightly, you've said, people don't like to talk about it. People don't like to use the word.
Yeah.
So are you okay with me asking you some very direct questions on that subject?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
Are you emotionally prepared for Cameron's death?
No. Being that it nearly happened recently, not at all. You know, death, you never want your child to die first. Equally, I am scared of going before he does because that means that he's left alone without the support. You know, obviously somebody will step in, but that somebody is not going to be his mum.
But it's a worry for you.
You know, it's most people, you know, they worry about their children dying and rightly so. And, you know, if you were to, you know, if I could take away his pain and live it instead, of course I would, but I don't want Cameron to die, but yet I'm quite worried about dying before he does. As for the thought of him dying, like recently, I think I went into a bit of disassociation and just got through the admission and got through his coma and the everything else relating to coming out of that and getting better, but it shook me, and it was, I'm not ready. You know, we haven't talked about a funeral. We haven't talked about, you know, I've had friends who have lost their children, and I have seen from my point of view what they have gone through, and I still can't see myself doing that. It's just not like I would bury my head in the sand rather than plan for his death. It's just not something that I'm comfortable to talk about because he has been so healthy and robust.
Mm. There are times when you feel alone?
Yeah, look, there's always, you know, I don't ever want to upset someone, and you know, so I kind of, while we are living here, the fight or flight every single day, the constant heightened anxiety of, you know, because this recent admission was infection related, and I can still see the marking on his leg tracking up, even, you know, now every little mark I think, oh my gosh, what's that. Yeah, so I'm very well aware, and I'm living in it's every day is heightened, and I'm aware, and it's not a fight every day, but it's not a, but then on the other hand, I've got people who, I've got friends who have lost their children, and I'm like, oh, you know, should I be complaining about how hard such and such is when so-and-so's lost their child and would give anything to have a sleepless night back with their child? And so I worry a lot, and I think, oh, you know, am I complaining too much because so-and-so's lost their child and they'd give anything to have their child call out from 4 o'clock in the morning and annoy the whole household. You know, so it's, I have a battle in my own head with things like that. But then, you know, I've got friends who have got neurotypical kids, so they are, for all intents and purposes, for want of a better word, their children are leading normal lives. And they, you know, they have their trouble, like, oh, so-and-so has smoked weed and, oh, I don't know what to do, and, oh, my gosh, and they're stressed and they're crying because so-and-so has done something wrong. And it's, you know, I would never go, oh, well, put it away, you know, mine's way worse. I would never do that to anyone else, so I kind of am learning myself not to do it to myself about other people as well, if you know what I mean.
So you're not alone. You have help at hospice when you need it. You have friends and family you can rely on for support.
Yeah, we have a big family. Benji's family, Benji is one of five, and they've all got two kids at least. One has got three. It's a big family, and they are all, we all talk to each other. There's no one going, oh, so-and-so's turned up again. You know, it's not a family like that. They all get along. They all love. If they love one, they love them all. So it's an incredibly supportive family that we are a part of, which is really, really good.
You said earlier, who am I? Who am I?
Yeah.
From my perspective, sitting across from you, you're incredibly intelligent. You're incredibly well-informed. You are resilient, emotionally well-balanced. You have a very broad perspective. You handle an extremely difficult situation with grace. I don't think I could cope in the way that you're coping. So I think you've answered your own question. Who am I? I haven't had a chance to realize myself, but I think you're actually fully realized. You just don't see it.
Yeah, you know, I'm very quick to put myself, to put everyone else ahead of myself. But on the other hand too, I like to think that I treat other people how I would want to be treated. It's just that sometimes I need reminding to treat myself like that.
So you say, what have I done? I'm not a nurse who's cared for people. I'm not a teacher who's taught people. You're speaking on this podcast, and you're speaking to an audience of many thousands, and you're showing them what's important in this life, what's important in this world.
Yeah, look,
what's important is what you're doing. You're living a life of incredible self-sacrifice, and you're doing it in a very graceful way.
Yeah.
And I think people have got a lot to learn from that.
I agreed to do the podcast. It was a bit, when she asked me if I would, I thought, this recent admission is, it was traumatic and it's taken a lot. And I'm only, as I said, I disassociated when we were in it, when we were in the trenches. And it's only now that I'm very much working through this raw trauma. And when she asked me to do it, I thought, I don't know if I could or should, or if it's too recent for me to talk about Cameron. But my main reasoning for doing so was, you know, if I can talk about it and if even one person resonates with something that I've said, or if I can teach one person something, if I can make one other person feel like, oh, hey, that's me too, then it's worth it. Because it can be a very isolating and lonely journey. And I hate that word journey too. It can be a very isolating and lonely life, but it's also fulfilling. And if I can help someone else to go, here, you know, I'm down here too. Come join me. Bring a coffee. It's my talking hopefully can only help at least one other person, two other people, 1,000. Then it's worth it.
As a society, as New Zealand society, you've got support from hospice.
Yep.
And you get funding from different agencies, I presume. Yes. Are we supporting you enough?
Hospice is. It's a funny old time for us at the moment, because Cameron was admitted to hospital on the 11th of December under paediatrics, because he was still under a paediatric team. He still had issues that they were working through, but it became quick, very, very apparent very quickly that Cameron was bigger than what the average child is that the paediatric nurses see on the ward. He is, at last measurement, he was 4 centimetres away from being 6 foot tall. And he's 18, he was 17 then, he's 18 now. So during the ICU stay, they actually said to me, look, if you agree, which was basically you have to because there is no choice, he was too big for the paediatric protocols, the paediatric dosages, so he got changed from the paediatric system to the adult system, which there is a lot left to be desired in the adult system from the paediatric system. Peds are still tying things up with us, so we haven't completely been cut off, but adult system is very, very, very different. Cameron ended up on the ward for the older people in rehabilitation, so they were mainly used to dealing with older people over 65, and some younger ones that require rehab for various different reasons, but peds have a wraparound support system. They have home care nurses that, you know, if I'm sitting at home and something's wrong, I can ring up the one nurse that she knows Cameron. She can look into his eyes and know what he's thinking or feeling, whereas, and she will then relate back to the primary carer, which is the paediatrician, who will then refer to wherever, whenever. Whereas adults, we are left to the GP, so that's a 2-week wait to get in sometimes. There are no nurses that we can just call up when we want. There are no specialists. I was told he wouldn't even get in under a neurology specialist because his condition is considered stable. The paediatric system is very supportive, but we are moving into an adult system where it is very unsupportive, especially of children that have come through. They have lifelong conditions, the adult side is not supportive. So even when Cameron turns 21, he will no longer be under Rainbow Place, so he will then not meet criteria for the adult palliative side.
So you won't be able to access that brake anymore?
No. And any brakes that we do have will be at the places that I mentioned earlier that possibly don't have the medical needs taken care of, and it is all care that I will have to pay for. Yes, it's funding. We get a packet of funding that has been reduced greatly, and I'm not going to get into political debate, but
it's been noted in other podcasts.
It's been noted, yep. There is a great big gap for the system to change and to take care of the more vulnerable in our society that can't take care of themselves and their main carers. If I'm not taken care of, who's going to take care of Cameron when I fall apart or break my back, strain my back? Who's going to look after him? You know, if you take away his main support, so me, and even his dad, because dad needs to work full time, who's going to take care of Cameron? He needs 24-hour care. And so when Rainbow Place becomes somewhere that Cameron is too old for, he will have to go back to paying for the services, which are roughly... Several years ago, I was quoted $440 for an overnight stay. So if you times that by two or three, that's nearly $1,500 just for two nights, three nights.
For the average family, that's unaffordable.
Yep. And the funding doesn't cover that. You might get one a year. You might get two a year.
If there was a home that Cameron could move into and live full time, would you take that option?
I can't answer that now because Cameron is still very much my child. He is, you know, his care involves, as I said, his care involves that of the 6-month-old baby. You know, so then you ask me, and you're not the only one. The GP said, oh, you're getting overwhelmed. Have you thought about putting him in residential care? And to me, it was just like, you know, I can't think about that at the, you know, maybe he, and certainly as I age, he's going to need a backup. And look, it might do him the world of good to slowly move away. But at the moment, he is very much in as part of our family, and I can't see that happening anytime soon. We've been talking as a family, leaning towards building a 2 or 3 bedroom house on our property and having carers come in for him out there eventually when he gets older, just to help him make the break away from relying on me so much, but he's still got the connection. I'm not saying it's not a good thing to do. Look, I know a friend who's got a child of similar age to Cameron, and they are making that move. They're transitioning him from being at home to being in full-time care, and that's great for him. That works for him. I can't see it working for our family at the moment. It will in the future, not now, not yet.
To finish up, Louise, how much does Cameron love his mum?
A lot. He's he is very regimented. If he comes in after school, he gets off the bus at our front door, comes in, if someone else says, oh, take your shoes off, mum will do it. He does. He loves his family, which includes me. He loves being part of the family. He loves the wider family network as well. Yeah, and if one person is not at home, like Damien has just had, he's 21, he's had a great summer. He's been away at festival after festival, and Cameron is very, when's Damien coming home? You know, he knows that someone's not in the house that should be in the house. And, you know, I want Grandma to come home from work, or when's Dad coming home from work? And if I do, you know, go out with a friend or something and leave Cameron with Dad or a carer, where's Mum? I want Mum, you know, he likes things to be all lined up in a neat little package, and that includes everyone in our house in the one spot where they should be.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.